Crusade Channel News. News you can trust because the truth can be trusted. From the Crusade Channel News Desk, here's Celeste Youngblood.
Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Youngblood, coming to you from the Veritas Radio Network News Bureau with your headlines at this hour on this Wednesday, October 4th, 2017. Catalonia will be declaring independence in a matter of days. Then I'll have your stock market report and saint of the day. Is there an optimal time for students to start school each day? A student at Temple University fell out his dorm window and died. France has voted to make their state of emergency permanent. And for those who may have missed it earlier, I have an extensive portrait of the Las Vegas killer's girlfriend, Mary Lou Danley. Reuters reports that Catalonia is expected to declare its independence from Spain on Monday. The autonomous region of Spain held a referendum on independence on October 1st and voted 92% to secede. Catalan lawmaker Maria Boya said via Twitter that the declaration of independence would take place after Monday's parliamentary session, in which the results of the vote would be evaluated. Boya said, quote, "We know that there may be disbarments, arrests, but we are prepared, and in no case will it be stopped." Catalan President Carles Puigdemont said to German news outlet Bild that he already feels like, quote, "a president of a free country where millions of people have made an important decision." President Puigdemont sat down with the BBC for an interview about this pivotal moment in Catalonian history.
Presidente Puigdemont, good to see you again. Thank you very much.
This is Carles Puigdemont's first interview since Sunday's disputed referendum. He's the leader of Catalonia's devolved government.
We're going to declare independence 48 hours after all the official results are counted.
And when will that be?
This will probably finish when we have the votes in from abroad at the end of the week, and therefore we will act over the weekend or early next week.
It feels like you're delaying and you're trying to provoke the Spanish government from acting so that they look like the bad guys.
We would always have liked this process to have been driven by dialogue. There wouldn't have been the police violence. But in any case, we decided some time ago that it would be the Catalans who should decide.
You talk about a process, including Sunday's referendum. It's been going on for years. It is akin to you taking the Spanish constitution and tearing it up. How could Spain ever accept that?
No society should accept a status quo it doesn't want, against its will, through force and beatings. And this can only be resolved with democracy. There are people who interpret the Constitution like the Bible, that it contains absolute truths and that it's more important than the will of the people.
But you're creating Catalan laws and you're saying that they are above Spanish laws. And whether you like it or not, you're still part of Spain. How can that be right?
It's obvious that we form part of Spain, but we can and we have the right to create our own state. And there's a very clear popular desire, which I don't think anyone disputes anymore, for us to decide our own future.
A lot of Catalans don't want to leave Spain.
If finally, through a non-binding consultation, a referendum, whatever mechanism they want, there's a majority of Catalans who want to create an independent state, there has to be a political response. We should never lose sight of this.
Hay que dar una respuesta política a eso. Y esto es lo que nunca debemos perder de vista.
Let's talk about the results of Sunday's disputed referendum. You say 2.2 million people voted, 40% of the electorate. And of those who voted, 90% voted yes to independence from Spain. Given the problems surrounding that vote, how can those results be credible?
Firstly, because there were so many people who wanted to vote but couldn't. That's a fact. Of the people who wanted to vote, and we were able to examine their ID card, but we weren't able to count their votes, with these people and the turnout, we would have gone way over the 50%.
But how can you be sure that people didn't vote twice?
No, we looked into the risk of people voting twice quite a lot, and there was a bit of work going through all the results. And if there was any doubt, we discarded the vote.
The European Union is saying that this is an internal Spanish matter. Do you agree?
No.
No. And what's more, it's very disappointing when I think everyone realizes the magnitude of the problem. Almost no one agrees with that here. It's a European issue. I think we've won the right to be heard. But what I find harder to understand is this indifference or absolute lack of interest in understanding what is happening here. They've never wanted to listen to us.
And the British government?
I think the only position that I've heard is that of Johnson, and I think that was unfortunate. If Europe continues believing in Madrid's narrative and denying the gravity of events, denying reality, they could get this completely wrong.
Tell me your feelings when you watched the violence by Spanish National Police here on Sunday.
Para mí fue muy triste, porque además la vi muy de cerca.
For me, it was very sad. I saw it close up. They indiscriminately smashed up the polling station where I was due to vote.
Porque se ensañaron muy especialmente en el colegio
where my daughters go to school, and they hurt a lot of people. People that I know who have never used violence, people who had their hands in the air. People who did nothing, were hit by police.
The Spanish government says that the Spanish National Police were simply doing their job.
How can we explain to the world that Europe is a paradise of democracy if we hit old women and people who have done nothing wrong? This is not acceptable. We haven't seen such a disproportionate and brutal use of force since the death of the dictator Franco.
Is your government talking to the Spanish government now?
No.
My call yesterday to ask for someone to mediate received no response, none at all.
What will you do if the Spanish government intervenes and takes control of your devolved government?
It will be another error in a long list of mistakes. After each mistake, we have become stronger. Today, we are closer to independence than we were a month ago. Each week, after every mistake, we've gained more support from society, a bigger majority in Catalonia who do not accept this situation. So a more clear-cut error, like taking over our administration or arresting members of our government, including me, this could be the ultimate mistake.
And now it's time for your market report. Puerto Rican municipal bonds plunged after President Trump, speaking with Fox News' Geraldo Rivera, declared his intent to wipe out Puerto Rican debt.
We're going to work something out. We have to look at their whole debt structure. You know, they owe a lot of money to your friends on Wall Street, and we're going to have to wipe that out. That's going to have to be, you can say goodbye to that. I don't know if it's Goldman Sachs, but whoever it is, you can wave goodbye to that. We have to do something about, because the debt was massive on the island.
CNBC reports that the island's general obligation bonds, which yield 8%, are now 36 cents on the dollar, which is a sharp drop from last month's trading figure of 56 cents to the dollar. Now, before we get to the current stock market figures, here's Reuters' Fred Katayama with his analysis of how the markets fared out yesterday.
Auto and airline stocks drove the markets to fresh record highs Tuesday. Telecom and consumer stocks leading the pack. UBS Asset Management Senior Equity Specialist Grant Bugman.
I think it's broadly a continuation of a theme that we've seen really over the last year or so. There's been a big rotation year to date from value equities, so traditional kind of cyclicals and financials, into growth stocks.
Vehicle sales revved up in September. General Motors U.S. sales rose 12%. Ford's U.S. sales increased more than 8%. Tesla shares rose. The luxury electric vehicle maker produced far fewer Model 3 mass market sedans in the third quarter than its original goal. Lennar shares were hoisted upward. Quarterly profit at the second largest American home builder rose and topped estimates. In Europe, energy shares drove the markets higher as the sell-off in Spanish stocks eased. German markets were closed for a holiday.
Okay, let's grab those current figures. Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 84 points and as of right now is up 36 at 22,677. The Nasdaq yesterday closed up 15 points and as of right now is up 6 points at 6,538. The S&P 500 yesterday closed up 5 points and as of right now is up 4 points at 2,539. Crude oil is down 7 cents at $50.35 a barrel. In the world markets, the Japanese Nikkei closed up 13 points and the Hong Kong Hang Seng closed up 207. The London FTSE 100 closed down less than a point and the DAX in Germany closed up 68. Today's quote of the day comes from St. Francis of Assisi. Start by doing what's necessary, then do what's possible, and suddenly you are doing the impossible. Coming up after the break in Lives of the Saints and Martyrs, we honor St. Francis of Assisi. You're listening to Crusade News.
Hey folks, when I was a kid, being called a bookworm was an insult of the highest order. Today, people want to be called bookworm to solve the world's political problems. At the Founders Trading Post, we have the books you need to help solve the world's problems and save your soul, too. From Humility of Heart to Patrick Henry, American Statesman, get started on your bookworm bona fides today by browsing to mikechurch.com/books. Most of our books are also signed by the authors. Shop like a Jeopardy champion today at mikechurch.com/books or call 844-5-CRUSADE.
Born in 1181 in Assisi, Francesco Bernardone was originally given the name of Giovanni after St. John the Baptist, but his father was displeased at his son having the name of a religious figure, so he renamed him Francesco due to his infatuation with France. Francesco grew up comfortable and wealthy and was a charismatic, well-liked figure. The times were permissive, and he fell in as the leader of a group of wild young people, saying of this time in his life, "I lived in sin." Francesco loved France, and being a good businessman was especially pleasing to his father. He dreamed of being a knight, but while fighting the war against neighboring Perugia, he was captured and imprisoned for a year in a dungeon. Returning home, he again resumed his life of revelry and awaited his next opportunity for wartime glory. When the Fourth Crusade was called, Francesco's father bought him a new suit of armor and a horse. A day after he departed, he was sent a dream from God telling him to return home, and he did, in disgrace, receiving much scorn from his father and the villagers. He returned to working for his father, spending increasing amounts of time in prayer and solitude. One day, while at the old church in San Damiano, Francesco heard God tell him to repair his church. Francesco, thinking God meant the actual edifice, sold some of his father's fabric to raise money to fix the church. His father accused him of theft and disowned him. Francesco returned the money and proceeded to strip down to his hair shirt and exclaim, "Pietro Bernardone is no longer my father. From now on I can say with complete freedom, Our Father, who art in heaven." And so he commenced his life of prayer, poverty, and joy. He was ordained a deacon and preached the message of returning to God and obedience to the church. Francesco was eventually joined by men seeking their sanctification through poverty. This was the beginning of the Franciscan order. Francis was known for his captivating preaching, even holding the attention of the animal kingdom. Later on, Francesco would go to Syria to try to convert the Muslims. He was captured and met with the Sultan, who was charmed by his preaching. Later, his brothers in religious life would rebel against the radical poverty of the order, and Francesco would be forced to step down from his position of authority in the order. In his final years, Francesco, who had received the stigmata, would go blind and suffer the effects of his years of poverty and wandering. He died in 1226 at the age of 45. Saint Francis, pray for us. CBS News reports that a tragedy took place at Temple University yesterday morning when 19-year-old freshman mechanical engineering student Richard Dalcourt fell out of his fifth-floor room's window. The circumstances surrounding his fall are unclear and are being investigated. The university is providing counsel for the students. Eternal rest grant to him, O Lord, and let perpetual light shine upon him. Fox News is reporting that the last body known to be trapped in the rubble in Mexico City following their 7.1 magnitude earthquake weeks ago has been removed. It was recovered from a collapsed office building. Mexico City Mayor Miguel Ángel Mancera has said, quote, "We do not have any missing persons and that all people are accounted for." Yesterday, officials said that the death toll of the September 19th earthquake had risen to 366. 225 of those were in Mexico City. The Daily Mail is reporting that students who start school before 8:30 a.m. are more prone to depression. In a study published in the journal Sleep Health, researchers from the University of Rochester Medical Center studied 197 students and discovered that earlier school start times increases the pressure upon children to get a decent night's sleep, and that those students who do not get the required 8 to 10 hours of sleep at night are more prone to mental health issues. Students who started school after 8:30 a.m. were found to have reduced incidences of depression and anxiety. The study's lead author, Dr. Jack Peltz, said, quote, "Better sleep hygiene combined with later school start times would yield better outcomes. In addition to getting that 8 to 10 hours of sleep each night, experts recommend the reduction of screen time before bed, limiting caffeine, and maintaining a consistent bedtime. Press TV is reporting that French lawmakers have approved an anti-terrorism bill making their state of emergency permanent. Individual liberties are disappearing as a result.
French Parliament has approved President Emmanuel Macron's new anti-terrorism law, which makes common police practice of nearly all the special powers granted to police during the state of emergency. Critics say that police will simply have to vaguely cite terrorism and they will no longer need a warrant for an arrest, raid, wiretap, house arrest, and much more.
This will give police and anti-terrorist services a lot of margin to maneuver and a lot of more responsibilities to intervene. However, many human rights organizations have warned that such changes to the law are an attack on individual liberties.
Muslims have been the target of more than 99% of all home raids since the emergency started, with only a handful of cases even leading to a trial. The closing of dozens of mosques is accused of infringing on freedom of religion. The banning of hundreds of anti-government demonstrations is accused of infringing on freedom of assembly. The arrest of hundreds of people for so-called supporting terrorism speech and the arrest of thousands of people at pro-democracy protests is accused of infringing on freedom of speech.
3 or 4 years ago, we wouldn't have imagined that such a law would be approved in France. But because of the terror attacks, people are less willing to criticize this aggressive effort to transform temporary and exceptional police powers into everyday law.
Macron is being criticized for sidelining the judicial branch and upsetting the balance of power among the three branches of government. His recent decision to change the labor code by decree, sidelining parliament, was also criticized as undemocratic. The state of emergency has been extremely popular with the public, although support for the new anti-terrorism law is down to 57%. Critics say the state of emergency is now permanent and a major setback to religious and ethnic unity in France. Rahman Mazahiri, Press TV, Paris.
Mary Lou Danley, the companion of Las Vegas shooter Stephen Paddock, is back in the United States to cooperate with authorities in the investigation into Sunday night's mass shooting on the Las Vegas Strip. NBC News has a video of Danley's arrival at LAX in which she is shown being wheeled around the airport in a wheelchair. Yahoo News reports that Mrs. Danley is a Filipino who used to live in Queensland, Australia. She worked in casinos, and a former neighbor who declined to be identified said, quote, "I can't believe it. She is bubbly, petite, and full of life. I would have never thought she would be tied up in anything like this." Danley moved to the United States in 1989. Newsweek reports that Danley, who was sent to the Philippines weeks before the mass shooting, has two Social Security numbers and was married to two men at the same time. She immigrated to the United States as Mary Lou Natividad and married Gary Danley in 1990. Mr. Danley has declined to speak to the press. In 1996, Mary Lou married Jose Bustos, but her marriage to Danley was still in effect and was not dissolved until 2015. Mary Lou was married both times in Clark County, Nevada, where Las Vegas is located, but resided in Tennessee, Arkansas, Florida, California, and other states, both with and without her husbands. According to California records, her name is Mary Lou Natividad Bustos, and she's 55 years old. According to Nevada, her name is Mary Lou Lou Danley, and she is 62. She is known to have a stepdaughter. Known to have a daughter. In 2012, while still married to Danley but living with Stephen Paddock, she filed for bankruptcy. This information contradicts a statement in the Daily Mail, which indicates that Danley told authorities that her relationship with Paddock began earlier this year. The Daily Mail also reports that she and Stephen Paddock were regulars at a local Starbucks in Virgin River Casino in Mesquite, Nevada. Esperanza Mendoza, a supervisor at that Starbucks, spoke with the Los Angeles Times and said that when they would show up and get their usual drinks, Stephen Paddock would verbally berate her in front of others at the Starbucks, and this would happen frequently. When she would ask for him to pay for the coffees with his casino card, he would glare at her and say, "You don't need my casino card for this. I'm paying for your drink, just like I'm paying for you." Mendoza then said she would cower behind him and say, "Okay." The Daily Mail reports that Danley was traveling between Tokyo and the Philippines around the time of the Las Vegas shooting, and that Paddock had wired $100,000 to a bank account in the Philippines a week before committing his evil atrocities. Danley's sisters spoke to Australia's 7 News Sydney.
No one can put the puzzles together, no one, except Mary Lou. And I know that she don't know anything as well like us. She was sent away. She was sent away so that she will be not there to interfere or put this flooding. She didn't even know that she's going to the Philippines until Steve said, oh, Mary Lou, I found you a cheap ticket to the Philippines. In that sense, I thank him for sparing my sister's life. But that won't be to compensate 59 people's life. She probably was even shocked than us because she is more closer to him than us. You know, to be able to find out that the person you love or you live with can do such thing. Mary Lou Danley is my sister. She's a good person and gentle soul, a mother, a grandmother, a sister, a friend.
ABC News reports that investigators have indicated that there is evidence of Stephen Paddock's mental state deteriorating in the months leading up to the mass shooting. He had been losing significant amounts of weight and was taking less care regarding his appearance. He had also recently become obsessed with his girlfriend's ex-husband. Although Mary Lou Danley is not in custody right now and is free to come and go as she pleases, she remains a person of interest, one who can hopefully provide some insight into the large cache of weapons, ammunition, and explosives, which was found in the Mesquite home that she shared with Paddock. As more information comes out, we will be sure to bring it to you. In this Celestial Musings, Crux reports that Cardinal Kevin Farrell, Prefect of the Dicastery for Laity, Family, and Life, delivered the keynote address at the Faith and Life Convention in Belfast at the end of September. During his address, he said that parishes need to establish study groups focused on Pope Francis's apostolic exhortation Amoris Laetitia, and then train couples to teach, prepare, guide, and accompany married couples. The cardinal said that priests, and I quote, have no credibility when it comes to living the reality of marriage, even though they may know the principles, the philosophy, and the theology. About his call to have lay couples offering marriage preparation, I think that is a fantastic idea. My sister and her husband do this, and any couple who works with them is blessed indeed. On the other hand, my sister and her husband received their marriage formation from a Monsignor, and he did a mighty fine job with that. I think that the quality of a couple's marriage preparation is not dependent on whether or not it is received from a priest or a married couple. The quality of a couple's marriage preparation is dependent on the faithfulness and experience of the one offering the preparation and their faithfulness to church teaching. I have to disagree heartily with the cardinal's statement about priestly lack of credibility in this area. You see, while priests may not live with their spouse, and their spouse is the church, here's what they do bring to the table. They bring the experiences of all the couples they have worked with previously. Whereas my husband and I only have our own marriage experience to fall back on, and maybe that of those who are close to us, priests speak with literally hundreds and thousands of married people, whether in marriage preparation or counseling or in the confessional. I have seen desperately broken marriages brought back to healing and thriving relationships through priestly counseling. Never underestimate or sell short our priests on what they know about the sacrament of matrimony, because their wisdom is great. The last thing the church needs right now is a member of the clergy making the statement that priests have no credibility when it comes to living the reality of marriage. This is a dangerous statement, one which has been made for at least decades, especially since the promulgation of Humanae Vitae. These sort of statements create a false dichotomy between the theology, philosophy, and principles of marriage and the lived reality of marriage. It creates a false paradigm of reality versus unattainable ideal in which the church's stance on marriage and marital issues is increasingly seen as out of touch with reality. This is how you get couples practicing contraception. This is how you get couples receiving Holy Communion outside of a valid marriage. Lastly, Cardinal Farrell was asked about the letter of filial correction, which was recently signed by dozens of priests, scholars, and writers, and sent to Pope Francis. The concern of that letter had to do with access to the sacraments for the divorced and civilly remarried Catholics. The cardinal's response was to label all of the signatories traditionalist Catholics, and he said that they would, quote, use any excuse just to attack him. Well, no, Your Eminence. They are concerned about an attack on the Eucharist. Nobody wants to have to confront the Holy Father over this issue. Nobody. Send me your news tips at news@veritasradionetwork.com. Keep yourself tuned in to the Veritas Radio Network, king-size truth from radio-sized speakers. Coming up next, The True Money Show. Celeste Youngblood signing off for the Crusade Channel. Serving you, serving truth.
You've just heard Crusade Channel News. Live on your news, talk, and saints leader, the Crusade Channel. And did you know that all newscasts are available as podcasts on CrusadeChannel.com and on our free app available in the Google Play and iTunes stores? Surprised?
If I woke up tomorrow with my head sewn to the carpet, I wouldn't be more surprised than I am right now.
Crusade Channel News. News you can trust. Because the truth can be trusted.